we're continuing our series of candidate forums today. Earlier in the week, we heard from the candidates running for governor, secretary of state, and the 19th state Senate district seat. And now we turn to Congress, beginning with the state's first congressional district.
The seat is currently held by Congressman Paul Ryan, who was first elected to the position in 1998. We extended an invitation to Congressman Ryan for a candidate forum. He was unable to join us.
So we turn now to his Democratic challenger. Rob Zurbon is a businessman, former Kenosha County Board Supervisor as well, and he joins us by phone. Rob, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Rob, we're going to start with a basic question. Why are you running for Congress?
To put it quite succinctly, I'm sure I can do a much better job than Paul Ryan has been doing since 1998. And, we need people to serve in Congress who are going to represent the interests of the first congressional district, and not the interest of one percenters or corporations and industries that, quite frankly, Paul Ryan has received millions of dollars from.
Now, this is your second time running against Congressman Ryan, and you're running in a district that a lot of political observers will say is a lock for the GOP. So with that in mind, what brought you back for another run at the seat?
Well, you know, sometimes it takes more than once or twice to win these congressional seats. And, we had such a good, strong showing in 2012. You know, it was the first time Paul Ryan had been elected with less than 55% of the vote. It was the first time that Paul Ryan lost his home voting ward, his hometown of Janesville, and his home county of Rock. So, Senator Feingold called me the day after the election was over congratulating me. And I had to remind him. I said, "Senator, you know I lost, right?" And he said, "Yes, I do." He said, "But look how good you did." He said, "This Paul Ryan had every single advantage a person could have had. You know, he was the incumbent. He had all the money he could want. He was the chair of a powerful committee, the Budget Committee, and he was even the VP nominee." And he said, "You've done better than anybody's ever done before." He said, "Please promise me you'll consider running again." Well, it was. It takes a lot out of you when you run for a congressional seat and you dedicate your whole life to it. And it took a little bit of time, but I thought, it was the right thing to do. And I knew the challenges of a midterm. You know, the district is still one of the district's 15% that are considered competitive. It's partisan voting index. It's not even R+3. So, while he has the advantage of incumbency, I'm not sure he's going to be there forever. In fact, I think maybe in 2016 he might launch a presidential campaign. Who knows?
Well, across the board from state Senate to the United States Congress, elections are coming down in many cases to two big issues, that is jobs and the economy. What role do you think Congress can and should play in spurring job creation in Wisconsin and beyond?
Well, Congress has a big role to play in moving our economy forward. They can do things like raise the minimum wage, which a lot of people have been advocating for. Members of Congress advocate for infrastructure spending in their districts with both public and private funds, because if you want to have companies relocate to your district, it better be, attractive and having the right kind of infrastructure that is needed to have the ability to create an environment that's conducive to commerce. You know, good roads, good bridges, well-educated workforce, good schools. These are the kinds of things that Congressman should fight for funding for his district for, which Congressman Ryan hasn't in the past. So, I think there's a lot more that could be done. You know, we've seen a mass exodus of jobs since Congressman Ryan's been in office. You know, the GM plant closed in Janesville. We lost the Chrysler plant here in Kenosha. Thousands of people have lost their jobs to these unfair trade deals that have allowed manufacturing to leave our shores. So we can fight for better trade deals that are, I call them, fair trade deals. It puts American workers on a level playing field with other workers around the world and make sure that they're given a fair shake and have those manufacturing jobs come back.
Now, there's a general sense that the economy has gotten better since the recession, but it's still not at the level that many would like it to be. As a congressman, what would you try to do to accelerate the pace of economic recovery?
Well, you're absolutely right. We have had economic recovery. To give you an example, we're now well below 10% unemployment, which was the peak during the recession. we're below 6% at 5.9% right now. Some of the things that we can do that will help that along is raising the minimum wage and building the middle class from the inside out. And once we get back to full employment with good paying jobs, that'll help keep the economic engine going. Again, some of those jobs could be infrastructure jobs, construction jobs, but those are two primary things that we can do. And I think increasing the minimum wage is a big part of it because, you know, 34% of the federal revenues is generated from payroll taxes, and the more you have, the more money people make, the more they pay into the payroll tax fund, and we get our budget back online as well. I mean, we've done well with that too. Our deficit spending is down from 9.8% to less than 2.9% this year, which is a good sign. That is lower than the 40-year historical average for deficit spending. And once we get a balanced budget with a balanced approach, we can address our long-term debt, which needs to be taken care of as well. So we're moving in the right direction, but I think, you know, increasing the minimum wage will go a long way to helping us get where we need to be.
Well, let's talk a bit more about the budget. You've cited some positive signs. There are also ongoing concerns about a growing national debt and inability to get the deficit down to manageable levels. What policies would you pursue to get the budget back on track and stable?
Well, look, like I said, we're down to 2.9%, which represents a $486 billion shortfall. And if you look at things like closing tax loopholes just for corporations, that's $182 billion a year. You get rid of the ability for corporations to use tax havens offshore. That's another $150 billion. And then you take subsidies away from profitable industries like just oil and gas is another $50 billion. Well, there's $382 billion right there that is not helping the average hard-working taxpayer here in America. These are corporations who are gaming the system and getting away with bloody murder. We all know GE doesn't pay taxes. Well, why don't they? Well, because of those tax loopholes. Yes, it's true. On the books, the United States has a 35% income tax rate for corporations, but nobody pays it. So, you know, corporations are only contributing 10% of the federal revenues right now. Back in the 1950s, that was 25%. So we need to get back to that kind of a ratio where they pay their fair share. They don't get away with bloody murder by not paying any taxes whatsoever. And we would be in a positive, and then that's how you go about addressing long-term debt. Look, I'm all in favor of tax reform. I'm all for hardworking Americans keeping more in their pocket. But to do that, we need to make sure that the corporations who are benefiting greatly, having record profits, pay their fair share into the pool as well.
So you would concentrate there instead of overall raising taxes?
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of things that just need to be cleaned up and straightened up. This is actually one area where Congressman Ryan and I agree, that we do need to have responsible tax reform. And while he and I may differ on what responsible tax reform looks like, we do recognize that a lot of these loopholes have to be closed. But what he won't tell you is the loopholes he's going to close would be things like the home mortgage deduction, which Americans, hardworking Americans, rely on to make sure that they're keeping their fair share in their pocket, or possibly the child income tax deduction. So read the fine print between any kind of proposals that you might see.
We're talking right now with Rob Zervon. He's the Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District seat, currently held by Paul Ryan. If you've got a question for him or you're wondering where he stands on an issue, you can give us a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Right now, we're hosting a candidate forum with Rob Zervon. He's the Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District seat, currently held by Paul Ryan.
We extended an invitation to Congressman Ryan to join us for a forum he was unable to accept. You can join in with your questions for Rob Zervon at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org.
And we go to our callers now. We have Diane with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm wondering, Paul Ryan wants to take our Social Security money and give it to the bankers to put in the stock market and charge us fees for changing it around in the stock market. Look at the stock market now going up and down, up and down. How do you stand on that proposal?
Okay, thank you, Diane. And there have been lingering question marks over the subject of Social Security and Medicare. What do you think needs to happen in order for these programs to stay solvent, if you think that's a priority?
Well, you know, obviously protecting the promise that we make to senior citizens is very important to me. And the way that we need to go about making sure that Social Security is there for future generations, I think one of the first steps we need to take is simply scrapping the cap. What I mean by that is anybody who earns over $113,700 stops paying into Social Security. And I think we need to stop that. Anybody, regardless of how much they make, needs to pay into the fund to make sure that Social Security is solvent for future generations of Americans. And that covers a huge portion of the what they look at when they say it's got funding issues. And then we need to consider possibly adjusting the contribution that people pay into Social Security to make sure that it's there. One of the couple of areas that I don't think we should look at is raising the age to qualify for it or reducing the benefits that seniors receive. I think that is going the wrong direction. I know that's something that Congressman Ryan has also considered, along with possibly putting a portion of it into the market. And, you know, we've seen what a bad idea that would have been with the crash and the subsequent recession. More and more senior citizens are relying more and more just on their Social Security for retirement. I know it was the same with my mom. She didn't make a whole lot of money. She struggled to make ends meet. And didn't have savings to retire on and didn't have a pension from a company. So her Social Security is essentially all she gets to live on. And, you know, I help her out and, you know, hope that these benefits that are there are enough to make sure that everybody has enough to get by on. So, yeah, we need to do everything we can to protect Social Security.
Well, thank you for the call, Diane. And let's go next to Joe joining us from Madison. Hi, Joe.
Hello. I was wondering what your position was in regard to the newly proposed pipeline, oil pipeline coming through Wisconsin.
There's a couple different proposals that are out there. One is for a new pipeline. One's for increasing capacity on existing pipeline. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of getting more and more energy from renewable energy sources and reducing our reliance on fossil fuels and foreign fuels. I think we're missing a huge opportunity by not investing in greener technologies. And, you know, the world's energy consumption is going to shift from fossil fuels to renewable energies, and we need to be a leader in this field and these technologies, because if we're not, somebody else will, and that's why I say it's going to be a missed opportunity. So, you know, look, my activism was rooted in the environment. I got my start locally advocating for the Great Lakes Compact. I got really upset when I saw that BP Amoco was given special permits to dump more and more sludge containing mercuries and other pollutants into Lake Michigan. I mean, this is our drinking water, for God's sakes. That's where I got started in getting active in my community, going door-to-door, making sure that everybody knew why it was so important that we pass the Great Lakes Compact. That led to me serving on the board of directors for the Wisconsin Lake of Conservation Voters, and then subsequently serving on county board, county board supervisor here in Kenosha. So I've been active in environmental causes for a long time. I don't support increased capacity through existing pipelines. I think you're creating potential problems, possibly environmental catastrophes that would have very significant consequences in our environment here.
Well, let's move on to another issue to make sure we have time.
Sure.
In recent years, members of Congress, they've shown an inability to work across the aisle. There's been gridlock, an approval rating at historic lows. And as a result, Americans aren't feeling a lot of confidence in Congress right now. And I think what a lot of people want to know is, what specifically would you do to change that culture?
Look, I served on the County Board of Supervisors and worked with people. We knew it's a nonpartisan office, but you know who sits on which side of the aisle. And we've worked together to make sure that we got the people's business done here locally, and because you have to. I often tell people, look, good ideas do not come with a party label. And proof of that is in the Affordable Care Act. That was passed with ideas from both parties. If you go back and you look, you'll find that the individual mandate is an idea that came out of the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank. If you look at the blueprint for the Affordable Care Act, it was Mitt Romney's plan in Massachusetts. So, you know, I do think that a lot of times they do find compromise. I mean, look at the immigration reform bill that came out of the Senate, was passed with bipartisan support. Unfortunately, I think for very partisan reasons, the House of Representatives didn't take it up. So it is a problem. You have to send people who are willing to recognize the good ideas and willing to negotiate and compromise. You know, I would have voted for the Senate bill on immigration had it come to the floor. I didn't agree with every provision that was in there, but that's what compromise is about, and that's what getting the people's business looks like. So unfortunately, there is a highly partisan environment, but I'm hoping we're starting to see that you need to move past it, move beyond ideology, and look at compromise and working together, or else you end up with a 9% or a 13% approval rating.
Well, let's look a little closer to home in our last minutes. You mentioned some challenges to your area. Janesville was hit hard in 2008 when GM began the process of closing the company's plant there. What are some of the issues here at home that you'd focus on as your district's representative?
Well, again, it's making sure that when we add jobs in the first congressional district, that they're good-paying jobs, that people who are working 40 hours a week aren't relying on assistance programs to survive. You know, I tell people all the time, I said, I believe the best way to eliminate an assistance program is by eliminating the need for an assistance program. And I think that that means making sure that corporations are paying a living wage. Because if they're not, our tax dollars are literally subsidizing their profits, because our tax dollars are paying for the assistance programs that their employees have to survive. So nobody should be working 40 hours a week and living in poverty. Corporations need to be paying a living wage, like heating assistance, housing assistance, food assistance. We pay for these with our tax dollars. If Walmart or McDonald's isn't paying enough for that person to survive without our tax dollars, we're subsidizing their profits, and that practice has got to stop.
Now, you mentioned earlier the Affordable Care Act. Are you happy with that law?
You know, I think it was a great step in the right direction. I tell people all the time that, you know, my position has always been with respect to Medicare and health care, is that we need to get to a situation where we have Medicare for all. You know, the Affordable Care Act, I say, was a good step in the right direction because it brought in protections and provisions that people like. They're very popular. You know, young adults can stay on their parents' plan until age 26. It got rid of pre-existing conditions. It removed caps on what insurance companies pay out. And it's gone a long way to controlling costs. And I tell people the reason I support a position of Medicare for all is from my business experience. I was a guy who had $1 million in payroll. I paid $120,000 a year subsidizing my employees' health insurance. During the Bush administration, when they had the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate, I saw my premiums going up 10, 12, 18% year after year. It was the single hardest expense for me to be able to try and count and calculate on. So, you know, we all pay into Medicare as employees and as employers, and it's a 1.45% that you pay on your payroll. So for me, having $1 million payroll, that meant I paid $14,500 per year on $1 million, compared to the $120,000 I was paying for private insurance. So we know from studies that if everybody were into Medicare, the expansion alone and the efficiencies would be so great that the savings would be enough to cover having everybody in it, because we're right now just covering the most expensive section of the population, which is seniors. But if you had the healthier populations and you get those efficiencies from everybody being in it, it's enough to pay for itself. But even if you had to adjust my contribution as an employer, even if you doubled it to $28,000, it would still be a lot less than what I paid in private insurance at $120,000.
And we have to leave it there. Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Rob Zerban, businessman and former Kenosha County Board supervisor. He's a Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 1st congressional district seat.